making TV special.
Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means?
It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Now, and we're highlighting individuals and companies who are helping the environment.
And one of those companies is Taco Bell. Starting this week, Taco Bell restaurants are going 100% green. Now, they're going to have to send in you items that you've come to know and love, but none of the ingredients are taken from nature.
And that means zero environmental impact. So joining us now live is Paul Lancaster, spokesman from Taco Bell. Hi, Paul.
Hello, Jim. Hello, Tracy.
Now, Paul, nothing on Taco Bell's new menu uses anything that came from nature.
Not a single ingredient. Starting this week, all of the ingredients that we use are going to be produced in labs by special Taco Bell food synthesizers.
Wow, and it tastes the same as before, Paul.
You can't even tell the difference.
Oh, the lettuce looks so realistic.
Now, how hard was it to make the leap into the eco-friendly menu?
Well, at Taco Bell, we have a long tradition of taking as little as possible from the natural world.
Right.
Our ground beef, for example, has always been fairly eco-friendly. It's 85% gluten filler, 8% petroleum-based grease flavoring, but it's always had 4% meat.
Well, that's bad.
Real livestock. Well, exactly right. But with Taco Bell's green initiative, we've actually been able to replace that 4% meat with a simple chemical adhesive.
So you're not wasting food or water to feed the cattle.
That's right.
And because you're using no natural ingredients whatsoever anymore, I understand you're able to add something that you're calling Super Green Supreme menu items that you never would have been able to do before.
Yes. At Taco Bell, Jim, we are changing the definition of food. Starting next month, we're introducing the Ultimate Grande Crunchador, which is jam-packed with chunks of an ingredient that has no equivalent in the natural world.
Wow, that
and
does
We also have a Chalupa, which removes the carbon dioxide and pollution from the air around it so that it helps reduce global warming.
Look at that. So we're eating at Taco Bell, we're cleaning the earth.
That's right.
Wow.
Amazing.
What are these science guys going to think of next?
Amazing.
In 3 years, we're planning to start melting down all of the lids, the straws, and the wrappers that food comes in and recycle it into new Taco Bell foods. You actually be eating the garbage you produce.
Isn't that something? Oh. That's quite an inspiration.
Yes. Paul, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, my pleasure.
Listen, don't go away, because when we come back, we're going to show you how to save money by writing your own book.
Taco Bell, Taco Bell, Taco Bell's new green menu takes no ingredients from nature. And this B-side episode of Media Monarchy boasts zero environmental impact. That was, of course, from The Onion. And when it made the rounds over on the FaceSpace pages, I don't think people got it initially. And that's a whole bizarre subtext layer to all of this, as people are so ready to gobble up the greenwashing. But I'm getting ahead of myself. This is the B-side of episode 129 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster. Coming to you a little early, quarter after eight, on this 4th of July weekend. It's the morning of July 3rd, 2009. Coming to you from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. Welcome to wherever you are, however you may be listening or re-listening to this transmission. The B-side episodes are the no-frills, no-time-constraints episodes where we cram in all the news that we can't cram in to the flagship show, which of course will be the 130th episode coming up. So like I said, of course, that's from The Onion, relying solely on synthetic lab-produced ingredients. That's at the top of foodworldorder.com right now, sister site to Media Monarchy, the little sister, foodworldorder.com. So we're going to hit the three latest postings there next. Homeopathic remedy now requires FDA approval. Get this. For years, the Zicam cold remedy, that's Z-I-C-A-M, it might be Zicam. I've never heard it said. Their blipverts haven't pierced my skull yet. For years, Zicam cold remedy has been sold as a drug for colds, but has never been tested by federal regulators because of its homeopathic nature. Zicam, manufactured by Matrix, with an extra X. It's a gel taken through intranasal administration and advertised as shortening the duration and severity of colds. Its main ingredient, zinc gluconate, has been associated with the loss of sense of smell. So we've got a bit from Reuters. Well, we've also got even a press release from the FDA themselves. The FDA has received more than 130 reports of a loss of sense of smell associated with the use of three Zicam products. In these reports, many people who experienced a loss of smell said the condition occurred with the first dose. Others reported a loss of sense of smell after multiple uses. The bit from Reuters, Matrix must seek FDA approval if it wants to continue selling Zicam zinc products administered via the nose. William Helmut, acting president, chief financial, and chief operating officer, said the company was not likely to do so, saying the process would take years and would be, quote-unquote, highly expensive. That post was put up to foodworldorder.com by my man John, lending a hand on foodworldorder.com. The third and last posting over there, more recalls. This time, it's a U.S. beef recall at the time of this posting, which is now almost a week ago. There were 18 illnesses suspected. I suppose there could be many more. again from Reuters, a Colorado meat company expanded a recall of beef due to possible contamination by E. coli. This after an investigation found 18 illnesses may be linked to the meat, the company said, and the U.S. Ag Department said, again, last Sunday, June 28th. Greeley, Colorado-based JBS Swift Beef Company is voluntarily expanding its June 24th recall to include about 380,000 pounds of assorted beef products, for a total recall of about 421,000 pounds. The affected beef and the assorted beef products, that sounds delicious. The contamination may have come from further processing by other companies, Chandler Keys, JBS Beef spokesman, said on Sunday. JBS Swift is a unit of Brazilian meat company, JBS SA, which I would assume South America. So those are the three latest postings to foodworldorder.com. Now let's jump to the main site, the king site, MediaMonarchy.com, and we're going to blast through a quick 7-2 news purge posted late last night. We're going to hit the drug war, some of the media memes, and a few little random assorted sundry items. First, headlines on the drug war. And this is interesting given the larger context of what we're going to see a little later and what we've already seen with Obama's Afghan surge. So this first one from Raw Story, U.S. gives up on eradicating Afghanistan's opium. Since the U.S. invaded Afghanistan, the country's number one cash crop, opium, has repeatedly broken production records. By some estimates, the occupied territory now supplies some 90% of the world's poppies. So far, eradication efforts have merely fueled the Taliban's coffers and driven civilian farmers further outside U.S. influence. Because of this, the U.S. has formed a new strategy in the fight against the crop. They are giving up. The Western policies against the opium crop, the poppy crop, have been a failure, said Richard Holbrook. Of course, Obama's envoy to Afghanistan and Pakistan speaking to a G8 conference on Afghanistan. They did not result in any damage to the Taliban, but they put farmers out of work. We're not going to support crop eradication. We're going to phase it out. Again, quote from Richard C. Holbrook, a quote to Reuters. Very interesting. Very sad and funny. I subscribe to a few little news of the weird feeds. Some good ones come from click2houston.com. Cops say man deposits $200 and some drugs at a bank, Tallahassee, Florida. Authorities said a man using the drive-thru at a Tallahassee bank deposited $200 and a small baggie containing marijuana and cocaine. Police said an employee at the Wachovia Bank called police Wednesday after the unusual deposit. An officer arrested a 38-year-old man and found the remnants of three marijuana cigarettes inside his vehicle. The man was charged with possession and released on $3,000 bail. It's not clear why the man included the drugs with his deposit, but we can hazard a guess. Another one that's just sort of planting the seed and things we'll explore further throughout these shows. DOD and DHS square off over border troops. This comes from the UPI, but we're going to have more on the border wars and some clips coming up. Last bit on the drug war, a positive drug story. By way of Cryptagon via Scientific American, 5 years later, Portugal's drug decriminalization policy shows positive results. So that's another big duh story. That, of course, we know that. So, studies still continually show. All the laws are there to create an underworld and to ensnare you. But let's blast through some of the media memes. Of course, a little bit of cleanup on the King of Pop. This, you know, of course, you can always see You know, they say if, you know, a bunch of celebrities tried to sneak away somewhere, a bunch of football players, all the news and all those people would bend over backwards to follow them and infiltrate. But when the world's elite banksters do it many times a year, the media doesn't pay any attention. But in the case of Michael Jackson, oh, they're going to sniff out every little inconsistency and, oh, conspiracy. But when it comes to things that really matter, you're a kook and it doesn't exist. Irregardless, a few things. First, from Time Magazine, but of course more thoroughly fleshed out from Natural News. Did drugs kill Michael Jackson? But the one from Natural News, Michael Jackson and Farrah Fawcett, the latest celebrity victims of Big Pharma. The interesting note, Jackson dies, almost takes internet with him. That comes from CNN, and there's more from Wikinews about the news of Jackson's death overloading the internet, sparking hoaxes and stories. But again, the headline, Jackson dies, almost takes internet with him. A lot of systems reacted to the surge in interest as though they were almost under like a denial of service attack. So, needless to say, anytime there's a story this big, there's always multiple subtext storylines. This ties in with the internet and the tubes. Oh, we might crash the internet. So we need internet too. Toll roads. And the last bit, by way, actually, of Alex Constantine, police to question Jackson's doctor again. But moving down the media meme list, a book on media censorship, you say? Let me get out my black marker. This from The Guardian. About a new book called Secrecy and the Media, the official history of the UK's D-notice system. Of course, the UK's D-notices are much like our own NSLs, National Security Letters, where you get something that tells you to shut up about something, and you're not allowed to say anything about any of it. Oscar-winning actor Carl Malden dies. Of course, the slew of celebrity deaths in the heat of the summer. The Washington Post, interestingly enough, mistakenly republished an article. A raw story says it's from 1964. If you hit the link over to the Washington Post, of course, the URL says that it was June 30th, 2009, but the story says 89. So it's a big mess, but it involves the longest-serving senator in the United States history, the man from my home state of West Virginia, Senator Robert Byrd, and all the good and bad and ugly that comes with him. But it's fun to watch big media lumber around. So Washington Post accidentally reposting a 40-year-old story as though it were brand new. An interesting question now. This is being asked by 3news.co.nz out of New Zealand. Could Angelina Jolie be the first female U.S. president? Now, we don't even have to read this article. All we need is my snarky comment below the headline to, could Angelina Jolie be the first female U.S. president? Well, she's a Council on Foreign Relations member and a United Nations spokesmodel, so probably. Last few interesting notes on the 7-2 news purge. The ship has sailed, and it was a good voyage while it lasted. File sharing site, the Pirate Bay, has been sold. We're going to get the first bit from Wikinews. Popular file sharing site, the Pirate Bay, sold 60 million Swedish money. About 4.7 million pounds. Swedish gaming company Global Gaming Factory, GGF, was the purchaser, paying half the price in cash and the rest in shares of the company. The other interesting note on the Pirate Bay, this from Threat Level. Insider trading suspected ahead of Pirate Bay sale. Securities regulators are investigating potential insider trading of a global gaming factory before it announced its planned purchase of the Pirate Bay for $7.7 million. That's in U.S. dough. Exchange Aktietorget told Swedish media. Aktietorget, a Swedish exchange listing some 116 public companies, suspended trading in global gaming a week before the announcement as trading volume and share prices jumped without the public news to account for it. There are reasons to suspect that information was leaked. I suppose that's all quite fitting for a site dedicated to leaks, in a way. A really bizarre and fascinating story. I thought about playing the clip, but it doesn't do it justice because you need to see the video of the girl who doesn't age. It's by way of ABC News, and I do not know the condition off the top of my head. Again, the girl who doesn't age from ABC, and she's 16 years old, and she looks like a toddler, and she rides in a stroller. Her younger sister, growing up like a normal girl, looks like a teenage girl and is walking next to her older sister pushing her in a carriage. Bizarre questions like, is this the link to the Fountain of Youth? And I would say if it is, then we don't want it. Fascinating, bizarre, interesting. The girl who doesn't age. The last bit, creepy enough. And of course, movies have been done on it and it's only going to happen more. And we only see sort of the crazed elite eugenicists doing things to their kids. Big Brother untangles baby Babble, or man turns his child into a CCTV star. This is from the BBC, the Big Brother Corporation, and of course it makes you think of something exactly like The Truman Show. That was the 7-2 News Purge, and now we're going to bust into some of the things we weren't able to get in to the last episode. But we've got, of course, a whole raft of updates. And this is all about what's going down abroad. I call it geopolitics with a K. No shortage of scary situations over there, as well as over here. Jeremy Scahill's definitely been one of the first and most prominent and most vocal of the mainline left, who has severely criticized the new Obamasiah, quickly realizing that you weren't going to get the change. Jeremy Scahill, of course, known for all his work on Blackwater, or Z, and we'll have more dirt on them in a little bit. He noted everybody changing their Twitter and Facebook icons with a little green cover for the color revolution. Jeremy Scahill asks, how about a new Facebook Twitter app for victims of U.S. war crimes? Seeing some of these people online turning their profile pictures green for Iran makes me want to create a Facebook Twitter app that turns profile pictures blood red. In solidarity with all of the Afghans and Iraqis and Pakistanis and more being killed by U.S. wars today. Wars that people in the U.S. failed to stop and whose representatives continue to fund to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars. The related article on Counterpunch pointing out quite correctly that these are Obama's wars now. Because again, we've asked the question, well, if the unitary executive Bush could write presidential directives and signing statements and executive orders saying all these illegal things were legal, can't you just write a new signing statement, presidential directive, executive order, rescinding all of it? Oh, that's right. You're not going to end the war. You're not going to end the war of terror. You're not going to end the spying on innocent folks. You're going to look at ways to lock them up indefinitely as you bob and weave around the closing of Guantanamo. You already got Bagram set up. I talked to my sister-in-law for a while yesterday. God love her. She is about to give birth any moment now, and I will be an uncle for the second time. And we only briefly broached upon the topic of politics. Of course, she sees all my feeds go up on Facebook. And like I've said before, for all the folks who know me from the East Side, they quietly wonder to themselves if I've gone down the crazy conspiracy theory hole. Yes. But it's not crazy. And it ain't my conspiracy. But basically, she's kind of on the main line, lefty angle, saying, well, wait, let's wait, let's see, hold on, we don't, hold on, we don't, he's only been, we, hold on. And it's what I referred to several months ago as basically they're holding off, putting it away, pushing it back. Their old shit moment. The next post on geopolitics, and again, this was all going on last week and beyond, and now there's even more, but we're still going to hit it chronologically, getting it all on the record on MediaMonarchy.com. Iran destabilization 2.0, vote fraud, black ops, and a color revolution. The first of several articles and mentions from my man James Corbett at CorbettReport.com. Destabilization 2.0, Soros, CIA, Mossad, and the new media destabilization of Iran. It's the 2009 presidential election in Iran, and opposition leader Mir Hussein Mousavi declares victory hours before the polls close, ensuring that any result to the contrary will be called into question. Western media goes into overdrive, fighting with each other to see who can offer the most hyperbolic denunciation of the vote and President Ahmadinejad's apparent victory. BBC wins by publishing bald-faced lies about the supposed popular uprising, which is later forced to be retracted. Remember those photos we mentioned? On June 13th, 30,000 tweets began to flood Twitter with live updates from Iran, most written in English and provided by a handful of newly registered users with identical profile photos. The Jerusalem Post writes a story about the Iran Twitter phenomenon a few hours after it starts, and who said Mossad isn't staying up to date with the new media? Now, YouTube is providing a breaking news link at the top of every page linking to the latest footage of the Iranian protests, all shot in high def, no less. Welcome to Destabilization 2.0, the latest version of a program that the Western powers have been running for decades in order to overthrow foreign, democratically elected governments that don't yield to the whims of Western governments and multinational corporations. That's just the middle chunk of James Corbett's piece, Destabilization 2.0. And I think that gives you a quick thumbnail sketch of what's been going down. Discussions on Gil Scott-Heron's The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. We don't have time for at this moment, but I'll just plant that seed with you as well. The rest on this Destabilization 2.0 posting vote fraud, black ops, and a color revolution is just an ugly list of headlines. Interestingly enough, well, no, wait, I'm getting ahead of myself. Hold on. From blacklistednews.com, are the Iranian protests another U.S. orchestrated color revolution? This is from Paul Craig Roberts. A number of commentators have expressed their idealistic belief in the purity of Mousavi. And, of course, the westernized use of Tehran. The CIA destabilization plan announced 2 years ago, with links for you, has somehow not contaminated unfolding events. Again, the claim is made that Ahmadinejad stole the election because the outcome was declared too soon after the polls closed for all the votes to have been counted. However, Mousavi declared his victory several hours before the polls closed. This is classic CIA destabilization designed to discredit the contrary outcome. It forces an early declaration of the vote. The longer the time interval between the preemptive declaration of victory and the release of the vote tally, the longer Mousavi has to create the impression that the authorities are using the time to fix the vote. It's amazing that people don't see through this trick. Again, this is from Paul Craig Roberts, a guy who knows what he's talking about. He's been around the block a couple times. ChartingStocks.net asking if there's an Israeli effort to destabilize Iran via Twitter. I believe those aforementioned 30,000 tweets that started to flood with identical new accounts. Source to Israel, or at least according to ChartingStocks.net. Kissinger, of course, calls for an Iran attack if this phony color revolution fails. More from InfoWars. Questions of a color revolution. Iran claims it's arrested MKO agents fomenting riots. That's false flag terror. That's when you dress up like another guy, hit your own gang. It's pretty simple. Yet some people can't seem to wrap their heads around it. You watch movies about the shit all the time, but you don't stop to think that it's probably happening live. AxisOfLogic.com has the CIA bribing Iranian officials, businessmen, and reporters, and paying Iranians to demonstrate in the streets. More video of Zbigniew Brzezinski discussing quote-unquote intelligent manipulation in Iran. We also know that he says in that same clip that the U.S. has intelligence agents working in Iran. We've known that. They're just telling you about it now. They announced that years ago. Again, the football's been handed off, but we're still moving down the field. The agenda goes on, is what I mean to say. Here's what's interesting. I had all set last week a clip to play from ex-CIA guy Michael Scheuer. Of course, famed and praised by all the mainline left. Limousine liberals, if you like. The Chomskys and Goodmans. Oh my. Ex-CIA Michael Scheuer says that, well, Obama managed to keep his big mouth shut while Israelis killed 1,500 people in Gaza, so why would he say anything about what's going on right now in Iran?
I think Mr. Wolfowitz before me and many people in the press want to sit here, and they want to break the Iranian regime. That's all we are interested in here. It's a matter of power. And for Westerners to flicker into YouTube and to urge these kids to go out on the street and, as Gary said, fall on the bayonets of the Revolutionary Guards, to me, it's just almost criminal. The United States should stay the devil out of this business. Obama managed to keep his big mouth shut while the Israelis killed 1,500 people in Gaza. He just hobnobbed with the greatest jail master in the Middle East in Cairo. Stay out of this business. America doesn't need another war at this moment, Wolf. It's just none of our business what goes on in that country.
So, but you support the president's decision to have a very sort of modest public posture, at least during this first week after the election.
His first statement was excellent. Apparently the neocons in his own administration now have got his ear, because clearly there's no such thing as a universal right to assembly and free speech. That differs from country to country. That's the neocon idea of imposing American values everywhere else in the world. It's a nonsense, and it's going to get people butchered in Iran.
Partisan politics. Oh, what's those neocons? Because we're going to see where people like Michael Scheuer really come down on what's going down. And we're going to get to that in just a little bit. A few more headlines on destabilization 2.0. Iran starts Air Force maneuvers in the Gulf. That's from Reuters. Nokia and Siemens helping Iran spy on internet users. That's from Threat Level. a clip from YouTube about how Western media backs green revolution in Iran. Western stooge Pahlavi positioning himself to take power in Iran. That's from InfoWars. Mossad, Taliban, whistleblower. Oh, he was killed in Pakistan. That's from PressTV.ir. Iran endgame or end of the beginning. That's from Danger Room. Brutal video and clips of, again, all the protests in Iran. But we've got videos of security forces beating people like animals. Obama claims CIA involvement in Iran is patently false. But again, we've hit up and linked and covered many, many times CIA in Iran for the last 2 years. Iranian Interior Minister says that Western intelligence is behind the riots and unrest. U.S. contacted Iran's Ayatollah right before the election. That's from the Washington Times. Google Maps tracking Iran protests. That's from Threat Level. As well from Threat Level, and we hit this before, but here it is again. Ballots exceeded voters by millions. So more irregularities. Were they stuffed beforehand or afterhand? But Press TV has an article saying no major irregularities in the election. Iran divided and the October surprise is a special report from Robert Perry over on ConsortiumNews.com. Iran's current political divisions can be traced back to a controversy nearly three decades ago when Iran faced war with Iraq and became entwined with U.S. and Israeli political maneuvers that set all three countries on a dangerous course that continues to this day. The October surprise. Here's another clip from another CIA guy. This time, it's Robert Baer saying that Mousavi might be as tough on the U.S. as good old Ahmadinejad.
Oh, I think that Mousavi has certainly gotten over this period of running the Islamic Jihad. He's gotten over his revolutionary days. But the point is, he's an Iranian nationalist. And people in the United States tend to look at him as a sort of pure form of a Democrat. It's just not the man. He is going to be as tough on the United States as Ahmadinejad is or any other Iranian. It's Americans are delusional about politics in Iran. I don't see him any other way. But Mousavi has blood on his hands. He was directly involved in blowing up the Marines. He was directly involved in blowing up the United States Embassy in Beirut. This is well documented in intelligence. His connections to the ambassador in Damascus who was running these operations, Hashemi Pour, Mousavi later in his interior minister, he does not have democratic root, nor is he particularly pro-Western. He is an Iranian nationalist.
What we did forget to mention is, of course, that Mousavi is known as the Butcher of Beirut. Chavez sees CIA hand in Iran unrest. That's from Global Research. And the last bit, a flashback to the original post on the Iranian elections on MediaMonarchy.com. Iran on fire, elections, questions, and protests. But let's further flesh out what's going on beyond the borders of the UNA, the NAU, of the USSA, here on this 4th of July weekend. Lynch mobs, documents, and Independence Day. Pentagon has deployed an experimental missile shield to protect Hawaii. We noted last week, of course, saber-rattling from North Korea, threatening to maybe lob some missiles towards Hawaii on the 4th of July, you know. We do know that they have recently even launched a couple missiles in the last 36 hours. But when North Korea threatened to launch a ballistic missile in March, the Pentagon responded coolly. No effort would be made to shoot down the test missile, Robert Gates said. Designated successor, Robert Gates. The experimental floating SBX missile defense radar would stay in dry dock. This was a test, not an imminent attack after all, and it would have cost as much as $100 million to move the thing into place. How times have changed. First came the attempted launch in April. Then last month, Pyongyang detonated a test nuclear device which may or may not have worked as planned. Now, the NORCs. That's a new one to me. Now the Norks are threatening to launch another Taipondong 2 missile with a 4,000-mile range towards Hawaii. And so Gates is pulling out all the stops to prepare for an intercept. That means sending Army Terminal High-Altitude Air Defense Missile Systems, still in development, to the islands and deploying the SBX radar. Joint Chiefs Vice Chairman General James Cartwright said he was 90-plus percent sure the U.S. could intercept a NORC missile in the unlikely event it overflew U.S. territory. Pentagon deploying experimental missile shields to Hawaii for this weekend. Planned North Korea launch unnerves Hawaii residents. That's from the San Francisco Guardian. U.S. prepared for any North Korean threat, says Obama from the Washington Times. Pentagon dismisses silliness. Pentagon dismisses as silliness North Korea threat to wipe out the U.S. That is from our good friends at Fox News. However, North Korea has threatened a shower of nuclear retaliation. That's from Danger Room, and that reminds me of what all the fireworks say, printed on the side. Emits showers of sparks. So for this 4th of July, we may have a shower of nuclear retaliation. I guess the more things change. Critics attack censorship as redactions blackout UK documents. That goes along with this one from The Independent. Lynch mob mentality scares UK politicians. It's basically come out that all their politicians are corrupt and wasting all the people's money and time. And they're a little mad about it, and now some of the corrupt politicians they're a little worried. But those are from The Guardian and The Independent, respectively. Mossad chief's term to be extended by another year. That's from The Jerusalem Post. They also asked the question if a third temple can be built without destroying the Dome of the Rock. The Al-Aqsa Mosque. I've often told friends who don't know anything about religion or world history or any of that kind of shit that's playing out right now, I basically say, hey, listen, when you hear on the news that the Dome of the Rock blew up, shit's on. So don't pay, you know, yeah, okay, don't worry about any of the religious stories in your tribe and my God and your God and this is my land and people and yada yada. When you hear something like that, that's a major move. We covered the North Carolina barrel monster, and the story grows. NewsObserver.com picked it up. Barrel monster's renowned spreads. Again, Dateline, Raleigh, North Carolina. The barrel monster, a playful statue made of orange and white construction barrels, only had a few hours of life on Hillsborough Street, but is basking in popularity as news spreads of its suspected creator's arrest by Raleigh police. In the week since, Joseph Carnival, a student at North Carolina State University, was arrested June 10th. Both he and the barrel monster have attracted attention from around the country and even the world. The monster's image was broadcast on national television networks amid coverage of the mass street demonstrations in Iran to protest the disputed election there. An interview with Carnival aired that afternoon on NPR's All Things Considered. At this writing, at this posting, 3,000 people had joined its Facebook page, and on and on and on. A nice example of how victimless, monkey-wrenching of the New World Order, and pranks, as Jello Biafra used to call for, they can grow and go viral. The barrel monster. Last few notes on this geopolitics posting, lynch mobs, documents, and Independence Day. Deadliest strike yet in the Pakistan drone war, again from Danger Room, and I'm sure that's probably now been superseded by some newer, even more deadly drone attack. There's a clip from Raw Story and Raw Replay about Killer McChrystal. He's, of course, the guy who helped cover up the murder of Pat Tillman. He's now in charge of Obama's Afghan surge. But he's issued orders to protect Afghani civilians. That Pakistan drone strike that we mentioned provoked silence? Asked Danger Room. Interesting video of tens of thousands of Chinese people fighting the police in Shishu. We've seen this before, actually, from China, where literally masses of people with pitchforks and fists go out and take things over. Or at least push back. China blocked Google services for an hour. That's from June 24th, and that's from The Guardian. A couple notes about Saddam, and we'll flesh it out a little more in a little bit. Saddam bluffed about WMD because he was really afraid of the Iranian arsenal. This all coming from new secret FBI files that have been declassified. So that first one's from New York Daily News. The next one's from TruthNews.us. Declassified docs reveal Saddam wanted an alliance with the U.S. This is from Paul Joseph Watson. Another piece of evidence to add to the patently obvious fact that the U.S. had resolved to bomb Iraq shortly after 9/11 and that the WMD charade was a staged sideshow is the fact that, according to newly released interrogation documents, Saddam Hussein actually wanted an alliance with the U.S. because he was more afraid of Iran. Saddam Hussein feared Iran's arsenal more than a U.S. attack and even considered asking ex-President George W. Bush to protect Iraq from its neighbor once secret FBI files show. That's a quote from the New York Daily News. And that closes out the geopolitical lynch mob's documents in Independence Day. The second, the more recent posting, fleshing out of geopolitics, is even uglier, my friends. Coups and covert ops. Trained and made in the USSA. Let's get first the mainstream, mainline basics on what went down last week in Honduras. From the New York Times, Honduran president ousted in military coup. President Manuel Zelaya, Z-E-L-A-Y-A, President Manuel Zelaya of Honduras was ousted by the army on Sunday, capping months of tensions over his efforts to lift presidential term limits. In the first military coup in Central America since the end of the war, soldiers stormed the presidential palace in the capital early in the morning, disarming the presidential guard, waking Mr. Zelaya and putting him on a plane to Costa Rica. Mr. Zelaya, a leftist aligned with President Hugo Chavez of Venezuela, angrily denounced the coup as illegal. "I am the president of Honduras," he insisted at the airport in San Jose, Costa Rica, still wearing his pajamas. Later Sunday, the Honduran Congress voted him out of office, replacing him with the president of Congress, Roberto Micheletti, or Micheletti, M-I-C-H-E-L-E-T-T-I, Roberto Micheletti. The military offered no public explanation for its actions, but the Supreme Court issued a statement saying that the military had acted to defend the law against, quote, those who had publicly spoken out and acted against the Constitution's provisions. I believe there is a funny Daily Show quote where it points out, as far as strong-arm leaders being overthrown by coups because he tried to introduce a resolution to the parliament about extend, that doesn't sound like strong arm tactics. Because generally nothing is as what it seems. Because now, let's bring it down with the ugly reality. Key leaders of Honduras military coup trained in U.S. This from SouthernStudies.org. At least two leaders of the coup, launched in Honduras Sunday, were apparently trained at a controversial Department of Defense school based at Fort Benning, Georgia. Infamous for producing graduates linked to torture, death squads, and other human rights abuses. Leftist President Manuel Zelaya was kidnapped and transported to Costa Rica after a growing controversy over a vote concerning term limits. Over that last week, Zelaya clashed with and eventually dismissed General Romeo Vasquez, who is now reportedly in charge of the armed forces that abducted the Honduran president. According to the watchdog group School of America's Watch, General Vasquez trained at the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation at least twice, in 1976 and 1984. Oh, those are both big election years. And that was when the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation was still called the School of the Americas. They can change their names, but they can't change their stripes. You can call it Blackwater, you can call it Z, you can call it Wackenhut, or you can call it the Geo Corp Group. And on Altria from Philip Morris. Honduras coup, throwback or dress rehearsal. That's from Alex Constantine. Honduras leader says country ready to go to war as riots flare. That's from Raw Story. And the last bit, again from Raw Story, the U.S. military has suspended military activities with Honduras. The United States suspended all military activities with Honduras until further notice, a Pentagon spokesman said last Wednesday, days after Zelaya was deposed in a coup. We postpone any activities in Honduras right now while we're assessing the situation. Our next article is from Kurt Nimmo, but it's still on the geopolitical tip, and it's still on the idea of fake revolutions and fronts. Obama moves to undermine Iran with CIA-linked U.S. aid democracy. That's USAID. That's the United States Agency for International Development. USAID. Ignore the neocons who whine that Obama and the Democrats are not doing enough to support the protesters arrayed in opposition to recently re-elected Mahmoud Ahmadinejad and the mullahs in Iran. The Obama administration is moving forward with plans to fund groups that support Iranian dissidents, quote, unquote, from USA Today. Let's hear that again. The Obama administration is moving forward with plans to fund groups that support Iranian dissidents. Another quote. The U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, which reports to the Secretary of State, has for the last year been soliciting applications for $20 million in grants to, quote, promote democracy, human rights, and the rule of law in Iran. According to documents on the agency's website, the final deadline for grant applications was June 30th. Or, let's put it another way, kids, the CIA will fund the opposition and this effort will be run out of Hillary Clinton's State Department. Public records show that USAID has long been a front for CIA intelligence gathering, as well as a conduit for CIA funding to foreign governments and agencies, according to Bill Kiesling, with a link to Yardbird.com. Pages 607 to 613 of the so-called CIA Family Jewels document describes a, quote, joint CIA-USAID training program. Andrew Natsios, USAID's former head, stated unequivocally in a widely distributed 2003 speech that even foreign USAID-funded contractors and NGOs, quote, are an arm of the U.S. government. And the role of the much smaller NED was made clear when Alan Weinstein, one of its founders, stated in 91 in the Washington Post that, quote, a lot of what we do today was done covertly 25 years ago by the CIA. It is well documented that the CIA's USAID, along with the Pentagon, the National Endowment for Democracy, and the Venezuelan Mafia in Miami attempted to overthrow Hugo Chavez. It has been affirmed that the coup against Chavez was CIA-made, writes Jean-Guy Allard of Granma International. That's linked over on ThirdWorldTraveler.com. Quote, the CIA and the State Department maintain various fronts in the country, as they always do. That's major international press. Another ugly list of headlines. First from WikiLeaks, U.S. state funds covert Israeli-linked Iran Visual News Corporation, a.k.a. Payment Online. Iranian envoy says the CIA was involved in the Nida shooting. That's been the big bandied about issue. The death of Nida. That's over to CNN. Iranian protesters avoid censorship with Navy technology. That's from the Washington Times, but Danger Room has more on it as well. Activists use U.S. tech to poke holes in the Iranian firewall. Tehran's demonstrators rose up by themselves, but the technology that helped them organize and helped them connect with the rest of the planet was funded in part by the U.S. government. Even in the pro-democracy protests, everyone made a big deal out of the State Department's call to Twitter asking the short messaging firm to reschedule maintenance so the Iranian opposition movement could keep communicating. In retrospect, that might have been one of the least meaningful moves an American agency made on the activist's behalf. More important, it now appears, are the millions of dollars invested over the years in technologies that could pry open the Iranian firewall and avoid the supreme leader's web censors. Saying similar things in a different way. After Iran, Twitter conspiracy theory hits Germany. This is from Press TV. Ahead of Germany's upcoming general elections, officials warn against premature announcements of alleged poll results by Twitter subscribers. Before the state media are allowed to broadcast exit polls, baseless postings regarding poll results could fuel ill-founded theorizations about the outcome of the event, German authorities said last Sunday, or Saturday, rather. It would be a disaster if the survey results were released before voting stations close. And that's a quote from Der Spiegel. More on CIA drones killing people in Pakistan. CIA drone that killed 65 Pakistanis missed its target. That's from ABC News. We, of course, know that AFRICOM is going to continue under Obama. Think of the European Union, AFRICOM, the North American Union. Another one from Alex Constantine. Another one connecting Mousavi and the Iran-Contra affair, which is a nice way to put what that was. But a disturbing one from Blacklisted News, and a nice big long PDF you can download and read it for yourself from the Brookings Institute. That's one of the big three places that most of Obama-sized cabinet and czars are from: the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, and the Brookings Institute. In a recent policy paper published by the influential Brookings Institute, the authors propose almost anything to guarantee dominance of Persia by the New World... That's Iran. Almost anything to guarantee dominance of Persia by the New World Order, including bribery, lying, cheating, and mass murdering by an all-out military assault of Iran. The paper, Which Path to Persia? Options for a New American Strategy Towards Iran, is just one of many recent and not so recent examples of the firm intent of the globalists to engage Iran militarily and acquire its natural resources in the same effort. Basically, to break it down, this Brookings Institute publication mentions the possibility of a quote-unquote horrific provocation to trigger the big move to Iran. Deep packet inspection of, or rather in U.S., scrutinized following Iran surveillance. That's from Threat Level. Inspecting those deep packets as they fly around the tubes. Color revolutions, old and new. Did we hit that already from Global Research? It all starts to run together as the news blows my mind. Europe weighs withdrawing diplomats from Iran. That's from the New York Times. Attacks and arrests slowing online news from Iran. Basically saying the obvious, that when you arrest real protesters and internet journalists, hey, there's no more news coming out about it. So thanks to CNN for the obvious. However, more great work from Russia Today and Wayne Madsen, where he goes over his information concerning the Taliban being imported to conduct false flag operations in, not Iran, but Iraq.
An investigative journalist in the United States claims American intelligence sent Afghan mercenaries into Iraq in order to attack the country's civilians and military personnel. Wayne Madsen says the Afghans were recruited from Taliban ranks and were paid for their services. Wayne Madsen joins us now live from Washington, D.C. Mr. Madsen, you're putting your head way above the parapet here. These are serious allegations that Americans are paying for attacks on their own military personnel. What is your evidence here?
Well, a very credible Western intelligence source that was stationed in Iraq in 2007 reports that during that year, a 40-foot-long tractor-trailer was stopped on the Karada Bridge in Baghdad by Iraqi police officers. When they looked in the back of the trailer, they found 30 to 40 Taliban guerrillas who said that they were brought in by the United States to stir up trouble in Iraq, to attack civilians and coalition forces. When the Iraqi police attempted to detain them for further questioning, the U.S. military commanders told them to let them go. In addition to that, I received a two-page list of Iraqi members of the Muqtada al-Sadr Mahdi Army who were being supplied with materials to make these improvised explosive devices, these roadside bombs. The list contained their cell phone numbers, their locations. When this list was turned over to U.S. forces to take action, nothing was done because at the time, General David Petraeus, the top U.S. military commander in Baghdad, had signed a ceasefire agreement 6 months earlier with Muqtada al-Sadr's Mahdi army and decided he didn't want to upset that ceasefire by taking action against al-Sadr, and no action was taken. So here we have two cases of the U.S. Basically not only looking the other way, but actively participating in this violence by bringing in Taliban guerrillas from Afghanistan.
You're a former naval officer yourself. You've also worked in security. You've got a good idea to the background here. Why would the U.S., though, want to further inflame violence and terrorism in Iraq?
Well, we just have to look at the whole panoply of crimes of the Bush and Cheney administration, everything from torture to the phony intelligence that got us into the war in Iraq, to see that there were geopolitical and oil and energy interests that were preeminent to keep U.S. forces inside Iraq, and what better way than to generate these what are known as false flag terror attacks. Of course, there had never been an entity called Al-Qaeda in Mesopotamia, but there certainly seemed to have been one that was quite active after U.S. forces occupied the nation. So I believe that this is just a classic false flag terror attack. We know that the U.S. has had a long history with the Taliban going back to the war in Afghanistan against the Soviet Union. Robin Cook, the late British Foreign Secretary, pointed out that Al-Qaeda was nothing more than a CIA database of people, funders and people, mercenaries that they could use against the Soviet Union in Afghanistan. And so we have a track record here.
Mr. Matz, you're also claiming that U.S. officials turned a blind eye to attacks they knew were going to happen. You intimated to that earlier. How much of what's going on, in your view, do you think is being orchestrated?
I think a lot of it is being orchestrated because the U.S., although the Obama administration is now withdrawing U.S. troops from Iraqi cities, we know that from statements made by top U.S. military commanders that U.S. troops may remain in Iraq for a number of years in these forward operating bases located out of the city. But it looks like the United States has no interest in leaving Iraq in its entirety anytime soon. I would also note that as far as Afghanistan's concerned, I'll be reporting later today that Bosnian Muslim guerrillas who were fighting in that country's civil war are now in Afghanistan as election monitors for the upcoming Afghan election. So we see the United States involved in moving a lot of people around Afghanistan and Iraq, and that is just more evidence that this government is interested more in perpetuating violence than in doing anything to stop it.
Well, Wayne Madsen, I'm afraid we've got to leave it there. Wayne Madsen, investigative journalist and article contributor from Washington, D.C., thank you for your thoughts on the program today.
More interested in prolonging the violence. And we may as well do it now. I'll glance over to Google News, where we see Marines targeting Taliban in the new Afghan surge. That's from CNN, as well as France 24, and the Washington Post, and the AFP, and the Telegraph, and Reuters, and Voice of America, and on and on and on. This almost seems to be a big PR push for the Afghan surge. There's also a bit from Reuters, a nice, long, seemingly favorable article about Ron Paul striking gold. That's, of course, referring to his audit the Fed bill. But that's Google News. Let's jump back to MediaMonarchy.com and geopolitics, coups and cover-ups, or rather coups and covert ops, trained and made in the USSA. Western governments funding Taliban and Al-Qaeda to kill U.S. troops and destabilize countries. That article from Paul Joseph Watson fleshes out the bit that we just heard from Wayne Mattson. Thousands of Pakistanis hold anti-U.S. rally. That's from Uruknet.com. Russian troops mass in war games near Georgia. That's from the AFP with English.CRI.CN asking, why is Russia staging major drills in North Caucasus, the same place where everything went down last summer? Israeli drones killed 29 civilians in the Gaza War. That's from Danger Room. And now we've mentioned Israel, and now we get to one of the bigger stories bubbling along in the last few days, and that would be the Israeli seizure of a boat and the kidnapping of the human rights workers thereon, taking their medicine, the toys, and even the olive branches and the olive trees that they had with them. PalestinianPrisoners.blogspot.com, Pirates of the Mediterranean from InfoWars, and that article is another one from Paul Craig Roberts. Fox News at least covers Cynthia McKinney demanding immediate release after her Gaza-bound boat is seized by Israeli Navy. Oh, yeah, I forgot to tell you that part. Cynthia McKinney is the most well-known person on this human rights boat. They were picked up, and they've basically been kidnapped by Israel. Press TV has the U.S. remaining silent over McKinney arrest by Israel. And the latest I have on this, by way of whatreallyhappened.com, where we link to the State Department, their own transcript. And yeah, and maybe it's a little slightly out of context, but it's a hoot. State Department on the McKinney situation, quote, on that last question, I don't have the answer, actually. I think I'll have to refer you to the government of Israel. And so the third article and bit from Paul Craig Roberts, this time on Russia Today, where he points out that the U.S. has become Israel's puppet government. The last question we'll cover on this massive geopolitics posting, coups, covert ops, trained and made in the USA. It's from Danger Room yet again, and it's very timely. I feel, again, we have to cover it, get it on the record, and ask the question, is North Korea preparing and prepping 4th of July fireworks? North Korea fired off a pair of short-range missiles yesterday, July 2nd. Reuters then reported a third. And speculation now centers on whether Pyongyang is planning a move and a more dramatic test of long-range missiles that could, in theory, reach Hawaii. Is North Korea prepping 4th of July fireworks for us? Probably not, but war provocations are in the offing. One more story we were going to cover last week, however, again, it just sets the table and gives more backstory to the new news that we have to cover immediately following. And this is from McClatchy. Agents say the DEA is forcing them to illegally work in Afghanistan. As the Obama administration, and again, this is before the big PR Afghan surge, mind you. This is posted up Monday, June 22nd. It's like ancient history. As the Obama administration ramps up the Drug Enforcement Administration's presence in Afghanistan, some special agent pilots contend that they're being illegally forced to go to a combat zone, while others who volunteered say they're not being properly equipped. In interviews with McClatchy, more than a dozen DEA agents describe a badly managed system in which some pilots have been sent to Afghanistan under duress or as punishment for bucking their superiors. Such complaints, so far mostly arising from the DEA's aviation division, could complicate the Obama administration's efforts to send dozens of additional DEA agents to Afghanistan as part of a civilian and military personnel surge that aims to stabilize the country. Starting to see the picture come together here. We, of course, have noted a million times that the DEA like to visit MediaMonarchy.com. So here from McClatchy, we have guys from the DEA saying that they're being forced to illegally work in Afghanistan, sometimes as punishment, and then even the guys who want to do it aren't equipped well to do it. We hit much earlier about the U.S. giving up eradicating the opium, that of course coming from the mouth of Holbrooke, our envoy. And what do we see now? The Afghan surge. War whores, expansion, growth, and refusal of oath. Let's get into it with what's going on now, and we'll get it right from military.com with a little alteration of the headline to cut to the chase. U.S. launches major Afghan surge op. Thousands of U.S. Marines move into the world's largest opium production area. Again, Associated Press, military.com. The comments at the bottom of the military.com posting are disturbing. They're all from a bunch of grunts who say, "Whoa, America, fuck yeah." I had a split second where I thought about leaving a comment. I was like, I'm not going to get into that at all. I'm not going to go engage the military on message boards because they're already being paid to engage you on the message boards. But I digress. U.S. launches major Afghan operation. Thousands of U.S. Marines and hundreds of Afghan troops moved into Taliban-infested villages with armor and helicopters Wednesday evening in the first major operation under President Barack Obama's revamped strategy to stabilize Afghanistan. The offensive in the once-forgotten war was launched shortly after 1 a.m. Thursday local time in the Helmand province, a Taliban stronghold in the southern part of the country. The goal is to clear insurgents from the hotly contested Helmand River Valley before the nation's August 20th presidential election. Dubbed Operation Khanjar, K-H-A-N-J-A-R, or Strike of the Sword, the military push was described by officials as the largest and fastest moving of the war's new phase. British forces last week led similar missions to fight and clear out insurgents in Helmand and neighboring Kandahar provinces. Now, what we don't get in that write-up is what I believe we do get from Raw Story, and they have links to all the other mainline sources, the Washington Post, Reuters, McClatchy. Oh, I'm searching. Where is it, baby? I know you pointed out. You lay it right out. Well, it's not coming up for me, but it's here. It's, of course, buried. We're not making up the fact that the Helmand province is the area of the world's largest production of opium. Like I said, it's all linked up right in there on military.com, Raw Story, Reuters, McClatchy, Washington Post. The Afghan surge. And again, the announcement that we've just given up trying to eradicate the opium. What's really going on? The Washington Times published another great piece from Ron Paul, "The Fight Them Over There Versus Over Here, a False Choice," pointing out just one of our many phony false choices. More on the CIA. This is from Global Research. They crucified a captive in Abu Ghraib prison. But remember, Obama size, keeping all that secret. Secrecy you can believe in. The AP again asking if toxic chemicals in Iraq cause soldiers' illnesses. I believe we've established quite firmly that they do, and did, and will, and are. Ranchers attempt to hold off Army's expansion in Colorado. That's from the Wall Street Journal. The military wants more and more and more, and plus, what do we need your farm for? We're going to move you into compact cities. Air Force test missile launch from the California coast. That's from the Mercury News. Major growth ahead for the Minot Air Force Base. That's from MinotDailyNews.com. Minot, North Dakota, home of the rogue B-52s. Guys falling asleep at the nuclear switch. Missiles falling over in ditches. Mistakenly sending parts to Taiwan for weapons. and now we've got major growth ahead for Minot. So basically, it seems like they're being rewarded for all their fine work in the War of Terror. Two bits from one of our favorite private military contractors, Science Applications International, SAIC. First, they've conducted critical info, emergency info sharing demonstration with their new national architecture, which ties in with their $30 million contract they just got from the U.S. Army Director of Info Management. InfoWar games, if you will. Interestingly enough, from DODBuzz.com, spy agency, the National Reconnaissance Office, the NRO, may face the axe. The Senate Intelligence Committee may try to break up the nation's storied spy satellite agency, the NRO, once a paragon of American technological brilliance and now considered by many a troubled bureaucracy that has had trouble getting the big things right. So we'll change their name and move it to something else. Their stripes will stay the same. And, of course, we always note that they were running war games and terror drills on the morning of 9/11. You know, just featuring hijacked planes crashing into government buildings. An interesting mind control note from Danger Room following the guy named James Walbert, who's been fighting the military. And this ties into the voice of God, the telepathic ray gun, Manchurian candidates, RFID chips, all of it. Thankfully, Danger Room does cover it. They, of course, always do it in a backhanded way, as if it's all crazy, even though they link to all the documentation for it. NPR ombudsman refuses interview with Glenn Greenwald of Ceylon regarding torture. Just another great example of the fake, phony left. The suppressed facts from Alex Constantine about the 100-plus deaths by U.S. torture. We finally now have the new DARPA chief. That's, of course, the mad scientist agency of the military. Bomb detection CEO named new DARPA boss. Mechanical engineer and defense entrepreneur Regina Dugan has been named the new director of DARPA, the Pentagon's premier research arm. I forget all that we covered from her, and I believe we even had visitors to MediaMonarchy.com that were searching her out. I can't remember, so I hesitate to say if she was one of the ones that somebody Googled her in supposed sexual affairs and dalliances. It's all up there. Go check it out. Lawsuit accuses ZXE contractors of murder, kidnapping, and child prostitution. That's from HamptonRoads.com. That's from a small local newspaper website. The last bit on the war horrors, expansion, growth, and refusal of oath. There's a new veterans group video featuring Henry Rollins.
We are facing new wars.
Yeah.
New veterans. The new challenges require new strategy and a new movement. That is where IAVA comes in. The mission is to better the lives of Iraq and Afghanistan veterans and their families. IAVA. Stronger together. We are a 21st century grassroots veterans organization utilizing the full power of the internet, the media, and local volunteers to shape public policy, promote awareness, and unite civilians and veterans around the country to make a difference. IAVA holds hundreds of events each year, including job fairs, care package parties, Pass Run in memory of fallen hero Pat Tillman, the 4th of July event on the deck of USS Midway, a special night for the troops with MTV, and Veterans Day parades nationwide.
It was amazing to be a part of the Veterans Day parade. Thank you for your service. When I come back, I can't wait to see all the great things the IAVA has done.
When I'm able to finally realize what actually is going on with me, and with the help that I needed, my life completely turned around.
Now, Henry Rollins does a lot of great work for American veterans. But that clip is just a little too slick, and the name of the group throws me off. Okay, so that's Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans for America, IAVA. But it almost, and it kind of got me for a second, because I thought it was IVAW. That's Iraq Veterans Against the War. That's a stronger position. So just a little nitpick against Henry Rollins. And no time to go further into it here. Because we got to keep moving. We got to wrap this up. But what got us into all of this bullshit mess, at least in this century? 9/11. Let's get the updates, the lawsuits, the licenses, and the liquor. And as we note, the more things change. Obama administration shutdowns 9/11 families lawsuit. This from Steve Watson. The Obama administration has effectively ended the efforts of families of victims of 9/11 to bring lawsuits against members of the Saudi royal family for financial links to the conspiracy. The Supreme Court last Monday ruled that it will not allow any lawsuits to go ahead just a few weeks after the government filed a court brief asking that the case be quashed. The court, in an order Monday, is leaving in place the ruling of a federal appeals court that the country and princes are protected by sovereign immunity, which generally means that foreign countries can't be sued in American courts. That from the Associated Press. In late May, the Justice Department sided in court with the Saudi monarchy in seeking to halt further legal action to hold it liable for the attacks. That's in May, and that's Obama's Justice Department. The move came less than a week before Obama was scheduled to meet Saudi King Abdullah as part of his rebuilding trip to the Middle East. Remember that? More than 6,000 family members denounced the move as a, quote, apparent move to appease a sometimes ally. The lawsuits claimed that Saudi Arabia and four of its princes actively aided in financing the plot through front groups posing as charities. Last week, the New York Times ran a report highlighting how documents uncovered by lawyers for the 9/11 families, quote, provide new evidence of extensive financial support for Al-Qaeda and other extremist groups by members of the Saudi royal family. End quote. We hit that headline last week. These next two bits are just related to the swirl of 9/11 news. First, from Raw Story, known terrorists were allowed to keep aviation licenses. Those of you who are shocked to discover after 9/11 how easy it is for persons linked to terrorism to acquire pilot's license may be surprised to discover that nearly 8 years after that fateful day, at least six people known to have or suspected of terrorist links were able to keep their aviation licenses. Among them, says the story in the New York Times, was a Libyan national convicted for his role in the 1988 bombing of Pan Am Flight 103 over Lockerbie, Scotland. The New York Times story, released late last Thursday and largely overlooked by the rest of the media, says the TSA and FAA didn't remove the individual's aviation licenses until the Times, you know, asked them about it. Evidently, the TSA and FAA didn't know that these people were licensed pilots until a small New York-based company called Safe Banking Systems uncovered the names while testing out a software app designed to search for suspected terrorists among bank records. Shocked. But the next one from the New York Post, WTC hard hats get hammered. Hard-drinking hard hats at the World Trade Center site have turned their lunch hour into happy hour, pounding beers and shots of hard liquor before returning to work. A New York Post investigation found dozens of workers belly up to the bar at Gin Mills on Murray Street, two blocks from the sacred soil of Ground Zero and America's most scrutinized construction project. So they gather at the bars shortly before noon every day. One group of three workers threw back eight drinks in less than an hour before returning to the job. There's a related bit in a video that I swiped from CBS2TV.com and posted up to YouTube.com/MediaMonarchy about others, just general other guys in New York City doing construction work and drinking on the job.
It has been a horrible year for construction accidents in the city.
Tonight, a CBS 2 hidden camera investigation exposes construction workers having a liquid lunch and heading back to work, putting everyone around them at risk. CBS's consumer reporter Kristen Cole has stunning undercover video.
It's like any happy hour at this New York City watering hole, except it's noon, and these construction workers still have to go back to work, building a sky-high condo complex on the Upper West Side.
They're not in the right state of mind. Only God knows what can possibly happen.
I am certainly distressed to
care that they're drinking.
The city boasts that New York is in the midst of a historic building boom, but with two recent crane accidents killing 9 people and the city's top crane inspector arrested on corruption charges, you would think safety would be a top priority. But in a hidden camera investigation, we found construction workers knocking back cocktails as many as 6.5 hours. On the menu day one, beer after beer. Then, day two, bombs up again, despite workers obviously knowing better. Day 3, 4, and 5, the party continues. And when the boss calls, listen to what this worker tells him over a beer.
I just come here to have my sandwich.
This is not the first time we've exposed this dangerous behavior. In February of 2007, we found construction crews on lunch break from Midtown's Bank of America building hitting the bars, too.
Judgment is one of the first things that tends to go when you are drinking.
Construction safety expert Kevin Begley says this behavior is nothing new, but it should absolutely not be tolerated.
There are too many things that can go wrong. Anything from taking a misstep somewhere that can cause a minor injury to killing someone.
In fact, the building's general contractor, Marson Contracting, was cited for 6 safety violations recently at this site, even fined. So we went to Marson for some answers. The owner, Leon Morano, refused to talk to us right then, agreeing to a sit-down interview, but he reneged, sending us this statement instead. Marson has no knowledge of, nor do we condone, trade contractor workers drinking at any time during the working day, and they say that's posted at the site.
If you have workers that, for some reason, need drink during the day, they have significant problems, and they should be getting them addressed.
Now, Marson Contracting has said that they have started an investigation after our visit to their offices. Despite all of the problems and accidents that have happened over the last year, Mayor Bloomberg would not grant us an interview, and the buildings department would only say they are now looking into.
A couple quick notes before we get to the latest big developments with 9/11 and Osama and CIA fronts. But first, a note from 911blogger.com and Aidan Monahan, who's been doing tons of Freedom of Information Act requests. The latest he's got is the Naval National Center for Energetics records of pre-9/11 nano-energetic materials development are either non-existent or they were destroyed. There's one called, or rather asking the question, were nuclear reactors the cause of the WTC destruction? This is part one of a 4-part article that's up on No to Real ID. That's on norfidid.wordpress.com. And it's from the Portland 9/11 Legislative Alliance, written by Russ Halberg, Barbara Ellis, and previous Media Monarchy live in studio guest Barry Ball. I believe he was Media Monarchy's first in-studio guest from Portland 9/11 Truth. There's also a new book claiming that Bin Laden spent 2 weeks in America. But let's cut to the chase. Let's get it from George Washington's blog. Washington's blog. There's several. They're fantastic. You ready for this? The former head of the CIA's Bin Laden unit wants Osama Bin Laden to nuke us.
The only chance we have as a country right now is for Osama bin Laden to deploy and detonate a major weapon in the United States. Only Osama can execute an attack which will force Americans to demand that their government protect them.
Everyone is appropriately outraged that the former head of the CIA unit which hunted bin Laden for almost a decade, Michael Scheuer, S-C-H-E-U-E-R, Michael Scheuer, as you just heard him telling Glenn Beck, quote, the only chance we have as a country right now is for Osama bin Laden to deploy and detonate a major weapon in the United States. But people aren't putting this in context. In fact, many neocons have also stated a desperate yearning for another attack on America. Link, link, link. But there is another story here as well. Remember, 3 points. One, the CIA commander in charge of the capture of bin Laden during the invasion of Afghanistan said that the U.S. let bin Laden escape from Afghanistan. Link. Document. Point two, a retired colonel and Fox News military analyst said, quote, "We know with 70% level of certainty, which is huge in the world of intel, that in August of 2007, bin Laden was in a convoy headed south from Tora Bora. We had his butt on camera, on satellite. We were listening to his conversations. We had the world's best hunters, killers, SEAL Team 6 nearby. We had the world-class Joint Special Operations Command, JSOC, coordinating with the CIA and other agencies. We had unmanned drones overhead with missiles on their wings. We had the best Air Force on the planet, begging to drop one on the terrorists. We had him in our sights. We had done it." Unbelievably, and in my opinion, criminally, we did not kill Osama bin Laden. That's a quote from a colonel. Third point, French soldiers insist that they easily could have captured or killed bin Laden, but that the American commanders stopped them. That's from JuanCole.com. In other words, as just demonstrated in just those 3 points, the U.S. didn't really try to capture bin Laden. And remember that the Congressional Joint Inquiry into 9/11 discovered that an FBI informant had hosted and rented a room to two of the hijackers in 2000, and that when the inquiry sought to interview the informant, the FBI refused outright and then hid him in an unknown location, and that high-level FBI officials stated these blocking maneuvers were undertaken under orders from the White House. Link, link, confirmation, New York Times, 9/11 Commission documents, BuzzFlash.com, Newsweek. And it was confirmed by the co-chair of the joint inquiry and former head of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Bob Graham. Also remember that a key Al-Qaeda trainer actually worked with the Green Berets and the CIA and was an FBI informant. We learned that from Triple Cross. Peter Lance. We also know that the CIA may have helped most of the 9/11 hijackers get their visas to the U.S., documented over to HistoryCommons.org. We also know that CIA agents allegedly met with bin Laden 2 months before 9/11. That's from The Guardian. Link. When bin Laden was already supposedly wanted for the bombing of the USS Cole, and when it was obvious to the intelligence services that he was supposedly planning 9/11. Another link. Given that the government shielded top Al-Qaeda members, and given that one of the top guys responsible for capturing bin Laden now wishes OBL would attack America using weapons of mass destruction, the question must be asked whether the people within the U.S. government wanted Osama bin Laden to attack the U.S. prior to 9/11. This is an especially interesting question, since a delay of a couple of minutes would have allowed the 9/11 attacks to succeed. This, of course, goes into Cheney and Panetta and the CIA talking to the New Yorker and talking to Ed Schultz. The last bit, a nice little flashback again to HistoryCommons.org, where we know that in spring 2004, Philip Zelikow, the executive director of the official 9/11 Commission cover-up, he got a memo urging criminal referral of false statements by the Pentagon and the FAA, and they didn't do anything about it for months. They were set up to fail. They felt like the military was lying to them. So, the head of the unit in the CIA that was trying to supposedly get bin Laden now says this.
The only chance we have as a country right now is for Osama bin Laden to deploy and detonate a major weapon in the United States. Only Osama can execute an attack which will force Americans to demand that their government protect them.
Happy fucking 4th of July. Let's blast through the latest brutal, ugly list of headlines in the world of death and destruction, murder and mayhem, fast cars, danger, fire and knives. The Illinois derailment revives the hazmat debate. That's from the Washington Times, and that's referring to that train derailment two Saturdays ago that just happened to happen during the middle of war games called Ardent Century that would contain train derailments. And then 2 days later, a train derails massively in D.C. Brazil winds down the hunt for Flight 447. We've got updates from Press TV as well as Wiki News. Brazil ceases hunt for bodies from Air France crash. However, the latest I have on this from the Washington Post, now investigators say Air France Flight 447 broke apart on impact with the water. So it didn't blow up in the sky. All we know is that we don't know what happened. paying tribute to the Metro hero at a memorial for the train operator. That's, again, the aforementioned D.C. Metro crash. Surprisingly, they didn't blame it on the pilot. Another media death, infomercial pitchman Billy Mays, dead at 50. A report from U.S. News and World Report says teens who think they'll die young take more risks. Crash kills 9 on an Oklahoma turnpike. A Yemeni passenger plane with 150 people on board crashed into the Indian Ocean. A disturbing one here close to home. This, again, out of North Carolina. Duke University. Neighbors close in after sex charges is the article headline from NewsObserver.com. But what's really going on is a Duke researcher has been accused of offering up his adopted 5-year-old son for sex. A U.S. city car park floors collapse. I believe that was in Missouri. An Italian train derailed and exploded and killed 6. 7 kids were shot near a Detroit school. Charged with pouring gas on his girlfriend, Tennessee police officer resigns. We also have the crash of the Staten Island Ferry, injuring 10, and a pet Burmese python killing a 2-year-old girl in where else but Florida. Our last note on this B-side episode of 129 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's a little history mystery, but as we've seen throughout these episodes, and as we will continue to see, that a lot of this isn't new. It's the same story repeating itself in different ways, because we're not learning from history. And we're seeing that the more things change, the more they stay the fucking same. Rothschilds and Freshfields founders had links to slavery. This from one of the major mouthpieces of the global elite, the Financial Times. Two of the biggest names in the City of London had previously undisclosed links to slavery in the British colonies, documents seen by the Financial Times have revealed.
It's no secret that slavery was once a part of London's economy. At various sites along the Thames, goods produced by slaves would arrive by ship from around the globe to be unloaded at one of the many piers or wharfs that lined both banks. Beyond the waterfront, the areas that now comprise London's modern financial district were also key to the industry. In the streets around the Bank of England, ships and insurance used in the slave trade were sold and bought.
Here at 12 St. Michael's Alley is the site of the Jamaica Coffee House. It's where slave owners came to advertise the sale of their slaves and to offer bounties for those who had escaped. It's one of the many sites dotted around the square mile of London that reminds us of the link the city has had with slavery and the profits that were made off its back.
And those links may soon become a bit clearer. University College London recently launched a new project titled The Legacy of British Slave Ownership. UCL aims to document the identity of every slave owner in Britain at the time of abolition. Professor Catherine Hall, who heads up the project, says that Britain's role in slavery is in need of a fresh perspective.
Instead of saying, on the one hand, you know, slavery wasn't significant at all to London's history, or on the other hand, saying, you know, the whole of British capitalist society is built on slavery, we want to say, what part did it play? It certainly played an important part, but what part?
Research of the database has already turned up some interesting connections. Documents kept at the National Archives in Kew have uncovered previously unknown links between N.M. Rothschild, of the famous banking family, and James William Freshfield, founder of Freshfields, the city law firm. The Rothschild family's chief archivist was surprised at the news, as the information was neither in the family's extensive archive nor in the 2-volume history written on the family. Both Rothschilds and Freshfields were quick to point to the reformist elements of their predecessors' lies. Those behind the project think that shedding light on the past can only be a good thing.
I mean, I think we'll discover things that are uncomfortable for some people, but I think it's much better to be open about this history, and I think the experience of people when they are open about it is that you can deal with it. Things that are hidden are much more troublesome on the whole than things that are openly acknowledged.
Further east from the Square Mile, at London's Docklands, the links between global financial houses and the slave trade are merely geographical. Here at the Museum of London, a permanent exhibition stands as testament to the wharves and warehouses along the River Thames where goods produced by slaves across the empire would make their way to the capital. But with UCL's work just getting started, we may soon know more about the past and what the implications are for the present. I'm Carol Ahoyos for the Financial Times.
Let justice be done, though the heavens fall. Rothschilds having links, surprise, surprise, to slavery. Funny little flashback note to last October where a guest on CNBC says that the Illuminati are behind the stock market crash. That's a great clip. That's going to do it for this B-side episode of 129 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, recording live from the home studio of the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. Stay tuned for the big 130th episode of MediaMonarchy.com.
How would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
It's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
Say out on my threat.
And that concludes our program for tonight.
This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.